Talk shows are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WGCH Radio.
Defy and Hustle Radio, and that was Obla Di Obla Da, and I love the White Album, so you'll be getting more songs from the White Album a little bit later in the show. But first, I wanted to talk to you about some of the wonderful guests I have coming up on Defy and Hustle Radio, starting with next week. It's the month of love, it's February. And I have on the renowned therapist and author of Independent Enough, a book about relationships and how, if you get your relationships right, how much healthier your entire life would be. It's psychotherapist Larry Shashansky. And you can download his book, which is called Independent Enough. And there is in there achievable day-to-day practices you could start to put in place, no matter whether you're married or in a relationship, that will start to shift the quality of your happiness for you and your partner in your relationship. So we're looking forward to having him on next week, and his book is free and downloadable at independentenough.com. Okay, on February 19th, we have on First Selectman Fred Camillo, and he's been the First Selectman here in Greenwich since December 1st, so we'll find out what he is up to, and I'm looking forward to that. Fred just happened to go to Manhattanville College, I saw, and that's a coincidence because I'm going to have on John DeBenedictis, who is the director of undergraduate professional studies at Manhattanville College, and he'll be coming on February 26th. In March, I have on Senator Alex Bergstein. She'll be coming on March 11th. And then the week after that, I have on Catherine Curtin from Greenwich Medical Spa. And that's a popular show, and she's going to tell you how, regardless of the fact that you might be aging, you don't have to look like you are. So she's going to give us all the current secrets on what's happening at the medical spa world that we need to know about. So that's the guest list so far, folks. But I have to tell you, January has been a fast month for me. And so I wanted to talk to you today about something that is affecting me. And I think based on the networking I'm doing, based on the clients that I work with, doing business development services and doing coaching services, it's something that's affecting all of us. And it's a paradigm shift that's happening in the career world and in the employment world. So maybe you can relate to something like this. If you are somebody who's been a professional, even a white-collar professional, for example, doctor, lawyer, accountant, dentist, that you've been doing your job for years and years and years, and you're successful, and now you may be in your late 40s, your 50s, your 60s, but you're finding that your rates are having to go down because they're being undercut by people who better understand branding and the tech marketplace. They may not have near the mastery that you have over your skill, but yet you're finding that your clients are going to these younger companies that just get their brand out there in the marketplace, and you're getting disrupted. You might understand the gig economy. If you were somebody coming out of school and you're not as highly skilled yet, but you just can't get a job, and so you're having to take contract work, you're going to have to listen here as we understand what is called the gig economy. And yeah, I have one client. She's down in Florida, and I'm helping her shift. She just sold her physical therapy business, and now she's working for another company that does physical therapy. And it's not unlike Uber, Lyft, TaskRabbit.com. What's happening in this paradigm shift now is that we are having to work for a tech software, really. If you think about what Uber really is, it is an algorithm. It is an intermediary that is putting together the people who need a service with the people that will provide it. But it is this algorithm that is sort of giving you a job and yet taking away so much of the benefits of being in the traditional workforce. So whether you are the person who's having to take the gig job, you're the gig contractor, or you're the big firm, or like myself, I work with contractors at Defy and Hustle Business Solutions, the small business owner who's working with the people who are gig contractors, we are all being affected by this. And there's some fascinating things I think we ought to know. So I'm going to talk to you a little bit about how much the game has changed. And I'm just, when I hear about how well the employment stats are doing in the United States, that there's very few that are unemployed, I don't know for sure. But I go to networking events, I have clients, I talk to my peers, and I'm in my 50s, and I have a lot of very successful peers, and I'm telling you, many of them are making less money than they ever did, or they are scraping by, and that includes right here in Greenwich, Connecticut. So, and there is also what they call a shadow workforce that maybe the government isn't completely picking up on. It is a lot of people who are working for companies. You don't really know who they are or where, you know, how they're being employed. But you probably do understand it if you call up one of the big utilities and try and get your work done, and you end up on the phone with somebody who may be far away. But there's a shadow workforce of people that are working at very low rates. And this is the name of the game, folks. And so the more that we realize it's a game, the gig economy is a new game, the better we can start to play in this game. And because I do work with clients who are trying to get their businesses out there, and many of them who are used to the traditional workforce are frustrated, I try to tell them, you've got to get out there and hustle. Defy and hustle. Defy is a mindset shift that needs to happen. Hustle means that's the new name of the game. So let me start here. So what is the gig economy? And what the gig economy is a modern term for short-term work relationships. This is in contrast to the traditional workforce, where you're going to work for an employer full-time and you're getting benefits. So these gig workers are free agents. And so you do have to think of companies like Uber, DoorDash, Freelancer.com. These gig workers are self-employed. They are contract workers. And so when people, when I see them out at networking events and they tell me they're self-employed, Then they talk to me on the side because they're not they're not getting off their feet because they're self-employed and they're so busy with their business and they're so overwhelmed. And I know this because I started my business and I know how overwhelming it can be. They cannot get out there and develop their business because they are so busy managing these gig workers that work for them and paying them money that it's hard for them to get out there and really work with their own clients or network their own business. And so now I'm taking more and more clients and just doing business development for them. But according to a study by Katz and Kruger, 1/3 of Americans perform some sort of work, some sort of independent work. 1 in 6 workers are considered a contract worker, and I think the number is getting even larger. And up to 46% of the workforce participate in the gig economy in some form. So whether that's you as the gig contractor, me as the small business owner, or even the large companies that are hiring contractors and paying them 1099s instead of taking them full time, this is a fast expanding portion of the economy. This is the paradigm shift. There are 55 million freelancers, according to Freelancers Union and Upwork survey, a Freelancers Union and Upwork survey. You, if you're using their services, and you may be, even at home, you've got housekeeping people, landscapers, people fixing up your home, you are the contractee and they are the contractor. And what I want to introduce you to today is how financially precarious it is for these gig workers. They're like actors in Hollywood. They go sort of unnoticed. They're roaming around in our communities, but they are trying to get the next gig. So there are some benefits, of course, to working in the gig economy. I can remember, you know, when you're getting frustrated with your boss, and then the market started to open up and everybody wanted to work from home. And then they said, I'm leaving. I'm not going to take this. I'm going to go home and I'm going to work from home and I'm going to start my business. Well, I think that there is a real rude awakening taking place. Matter of fact, as I do more and more homework on this topic, you might really want to appreciate your employer. If you're working for somebody full time, you might go in there tomorrow with a new attitude and be very thankful that you're not out on your own trying to make things happen, because it's not that easy. So there's some pros to working in the gig economy, and they are basically there's convenient opportunities to make money. If you're an Uber driver, you have to go out there and you have to pay attention to the app and you'll get some chances to drive around people and make some money. And you also have the ability to set your own schedule. So that's some of the pros. But folks, there are a lot of cons. And so I'm going to tell you about 4 of them that relate to the employee, the gig contractor. And then I'm going to talk about it a little bit from the business person's side. So yes, you can set your hours and work from home and do different things. But this flexibility comes at a price. First of all, generally speaking, predominantly speaking, a gig contractor is that type of work is less profitable than going into the traditional workforce. You may not have a choice nowadays. You get let go, you get a little older, whatever the story is, you come out of college, you can't get a job. You may not have a choice. You may have to become a contractor, but it is generally less profitable and far more insecure than more traditional employment. Here are some of the reasons. A gig contractor position lacks workers' benefits and protections. So gig workers, they're working for you. They may be working for you on an as-needed basis. They may be working for a large organization, right? Some of the big companies. But they're on 1099s. 1099s means you're paying them a fixed amount for as much as you contracted them to work, right? So that could be a few days. It could be just one project. It could be months or years. But they're on 1099. So you don't have to offer them benefits. You don't have to give them 401ks. You don't have to give them health insurance, life insurance, or health savings accounts. This is all the responsibility of the gig worker. You're giving them a 1099, and that gig worker is responsible for handling all of their own taxes, paperwork. So this is affecting both highly skilled people and people who are lower skilled people in slightly different ways. But highly skilled people, let's say you used to be a C-suite executive and now you're running a small firm helping people get jobs, right? Generally speaking, that C-suite worker who's got his new company, he's self-employed, he's got his brand, is making substantially less than his C-suite peer who's still in the traditional workforce. And that is because there's time and space between them getting jobs. And if they're doing digital marketing, there's a lot of reasons, but if they're doing digital marketing, if they're spending time managing their money, their accounts, operations, clients, this is all hitting their pocketbook personally. So you might have been out there in the workforce making $250 an hour. You might be making $500 an hour. Lawyer, doctor, accountant, whatever the story is, but you are going to get that chopped down because there's so many competitors now. If you are a lower skilled worker, many of these workers are making below minimum wage because if they can even make $15 an hour, $20 an hour, but you start chipping away at that, think about the time it takes. They may be charging $20 an hour or $15 an hour, but generally speaking, you don't even start working. You start doing your work before that hour starts. You still may have to show up in an office. You still may have to do research. Once you start putting money aside, doing your own accounting and trying to just get the next gig and market yourself, you are making substantially less than minimum wage. So the first reason people in the gig economy, contractors in the gig economy, are doing poorly is because this gig economy lacks worker benefits and protections. The second reason is because it is a really poor place to develop your career or find a sense of belonging. If you think about it, especially if you take an example like Uber, and you can hear the stories in the news about the Uber employees wanting to or demanding benefits now. There are stories about, what are they called, the bicycle workers that deliver packages in New York City trying to unionize. When you're working for a Lyft or an Uber or an Upwork, you are at the mercy of an algorithm. You're not an employee. This algorithm doesn't care about you that much personally. You are basically waiting until you get the next gig. You have to be on this algorithm. I even read something that said the algorithm penalizes you if you don't work for it, like if you're not available all the time. So if you try to look for other work, the algorithm puts that next ride, for example, it gives it to somebody else who's more available all the time. So these platforms, they're the ones making all the money. They're the ones whose stock prices are shooting up while the people working for them are barely getting by in many cases. The platforms are not responsible for the well-being of their workers. So most gig workers are considered non-employees, and this has them outside of legal protections. They are doing their work on what's called a piece rate or a project basis, a project basis, and there's not always formal contracts or the ability to demand their payments on time, for example, or earn overtime, taking vacations, to fight if something goes wrong or they feel like they've been treated unfairly, something happens. I don't mean to pick on Uber, but it's just something I think that you would be able to identify with. But if something happens in the workplace that is disturbing, there's no human resource necessarily to go to. There's not a lawyer that's probably going to take their case. They don't have a lot of rights. It would be them against their the employer that hired them. Especially if this is a small business, there's even less formalities around the contracts. So they don't have a lot of legal protection. And it is something that's becoming an issue for our governments and our legal system. It's also a volatile workplace. It's financially precarious. So there's some people that are good at managing their money. But if you are getting, let's say you're a copywriter or a graphic artist, and you get 7 gigs, whether you get them yourself or you get it through a platform that finds the work for you, which many people are at the mercy of these platforms. They don't have the connections. So if you get 7 gigs in January and then 2 gigs in February, that's it. You got to manage your cash flow. I mean, this is what the entrepreneur and the small business owner go through on a regular basis. All companies do go through this. But if you're less savvy, if you're finding yourself in this position after having worked hard in the traditional workforce for years, and now you're finding yourself potentially reaching even retirement age, and suddenly you're thrust into this gig economy and you're having to manage your money differently than you had ever anticipated while you were in the traditional workforce, this is not always easy to plan for because you have to know tax rules and you have to be reporting and you have to just manage your money. And then if you're a college student who's just coming out who never really got a chance to really work their way and develop their business acumen, this can be really, really a difficult situation. So it is requiring financial discipline, and it is at times financially precarious. So Bob, you're shaking your head. Do you want to go to a commercial?
Oh, I was about to say, without having said it, but yes.
Okay, I can tell with Bob. So this is Noreen Ehrlich. This is Defy and Hustle Radio. I'm here tonight talking about the gig economy and what it means to you. Come on back. We'll be talking more.
Good evening. There's an accident on the northbound Connecticut Turnpike right around exit 5. Bumper-to-bumper traffic now on the turnpike from Exit 3 up to Exit 5. Northbound Merritt Parkway from Greenwich up to Norwalk. It's a 24-minute ride. Use your power to cure IBS. Join the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation at Spin for Crohn's and Colitis Cures. Get started at spin4.org. I'm Jay Trelace in the 1490 Traffic Center.
From the WGCH Weather Center.
Mostly clear and very cold tonight, lows 10 to 15, mostly sunny tomorrow near 35, mostly clear tomorrow night and chilly 15, mix of sun and clouds Friday 40, snow showers developing Saturday, highs 35 to 40 and partly sunny Sunday near 40. For the start of the week Monday, mostly sunny 45, considerable cloudiness Tuesday, highs 45 to 50. I'm meteorologist Aaron Zalkman on 1490 WGCH.
What if I told you I could change your life in just 100 days? This is Noreen Ehrlich from Defy and Hustle Radio. I'm an executive coach based in Greenwich, Connecticut. For over 2 decades, I worked as a CFO and leader in Wall Street's fast-paced private equity industry. I helped guide teams of professionals to improve their careers, grow their businesses, and still maintain work-life balance. Based on this know-how and my unique understanding of life's principles, I created a 100-day plan that will unquestionably up-level your life. Make 2019 your year. You can and deserve to have it all. Don't wait. Take advantage of my free 50-minute consultation by visiting my website at NoreenErlich.com or calling me at 475-333-2173.
Somewhere in the black mining hills of Dakota, there lived a young boy named Rocky Raccoon. And one day his woman ran off with another guy, hit young Rocky in the eye. Rocky didn't like that, he said, I'm gonna get that boy. So one day he walked into town, booked himself a room in the local saloon. Rocky Raccoon checked into his room, only to find Gideon's Bible. Rocky had come equipped with a gun to shoot off the legs of his rival.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Defiant Hustle Radio. This is Noreen Erlich teaching you about the gig economy, and there's a reason for it, folks, because it is affecting all of us, and I, as a small business owner, I understand what it's like to try and work with people who are contractors, and it's both wonderful, and there's real drawbacks to it. And I'm also working with companies and trying to teach them how to be efficient using contract employers or not. And Bob and I were just talking over the break about how tricky it can be to work with people who are contractors, who are part-time contractors, and the impact it's having on what I'm going to say is the disparity it's creating between the haves and the have-nots again, where the big companies are benefiting from it, but the small companies and the gig workers themselves are struggling a bit.
Radio business has had gig workers for a long time, and it was a way for the person with relatively little experience to get a chance to work in the business, because without us having to pay them a lot, they get a chance to see what it's like to be in radio in on some level,
like an internship but with some pay.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the theory would be that once they've got some experience, then they then might be able to turn to us and say, listen, you've got all these hours here where you need somebody to do this job. Can you pay me for all of those hours and actually hire me as a full-time employee? Well, that's becoming harder and harder for them to get.
But for the small businesses to hire.
Yeah, for them to do that, and for the gig worker to be able to pitch that and get any kind of response.
Because I was going to get to this, but it's the small business owner cannot easily afford to hire people.
And the government doesn't seem to have helped. They've made things even more difficult. And it isn't to say that what they're asking the small business owners to offer isn't something that should be offered. I mean, becoming more aggressive about maternity leave and making sure that the small businesses offer that to their employees, that's a good thing. But it's very hard for small businesses to build that into their system now.
Just managing people full time. Well, there's an upside to it. In some ways, I miss being in the boutique investment fund where you could gather everybody together in a room and have a discussion and get everybody on the same page. That's gone out the door. Just to have everybody unified in one place on the same mission. But now you have a bunch of people who aren't aligned, and in many cases, they're not even in the same city. So
it's, and next week they won't be working there,
and they're not
something like that,
right? You know. And then they take the next job,
yes,
because they have to chase the gig worker, the gig contractor has to chase the next lucrative, more lucrative contractor. We know what happens when you're building, you know, rebuilding your home or something. Mm. There used to be terrible stories that probably still are about the way the contractors just wouldn't show up again because they got another gig someplace else that was more lucrative. So they just left the job they were in and walked away and went to the next one. And it happens. And you've got small business. That small business owner might be making $20 million. But then when you get people that are barely making, you know, running a business, solopreneurs, that's another modern terminology, but people who are running their own businesses that just need help with marketing or accounting or copywriting, even cleaning. It's really, really demanding, and it's almost impossible for them to hire people and give them benefits. I'm going to just talk about two more components of the gig workers. Something that's a con for being a gig worker. And then I wanted to come back and talk about it from the small business owner's point of view.
Uh-huh.
So the gig workers, and I'm thinking about your children coming out of college now and their inability to pay back their loans. A lot of these young people are I'm allowed to call them young people now. I'm qualified to call people young people. They struggle to build up their careers because when you go into a traditional workplace, your employer is aligned to have you build up your career, to help you develop your skills. They'll invest in you going to training, or you'll have people around you that have been doing the job before, and they'll mentor you. And the idea in a traditional workforce is that you learn at one level, and your intention is to go up the hierarchy, to take the next higher level job. But these gig workers, when they come to work for you, they just want to do what they do. They just want to do the graphic design. So they don't they don't want the next higher job. So it makes it difficult for the employer, and it makes it difficult for the gig worker. So nobody's developing the skills of these people that are gig contractors. They don't have access to free training, they don't have mentorship, and they don't have a clearly defined career path. They have to jump from project to project, and they can rarely turn down lucrative jobs. So as Bob and I were talking about, you hire somebody, you invest some time into them, and then they can't work on your project because they've got another project. They're not answering your calls. They're gone altogether. You can't do a lot of background screening, too, if you're a small business owner and you're just taking somebody, you know, off of an algorithm. You're finding a worker who's on an algorithm. You can't always do your background check on them, too. You can't have like three rounds of interviews, and because the small business owner doesn't have that kind of freedom. So gig workers have to take responsibility for themselves, and they also are having to go into niches. They may just be working with a certain type of industry, doing copywriting for one type of industry. It's become so niche that the only way they can advertise themselves is by saying, I do graphic design for politicians. But the only problem with that is it knocks out all the other people that might potentially hire them. And once that job is no longer in demand, they're in this very, very narrow niche. But that's the way digital marketing is demanding that people present themselves nowadays. Everybody wants an expert in some very narrowly defined field. The last part I'll tell you is, and if you are a worker who's working on your own, it is a sense of belonging. And ownership of work, a sense of belonging to something and ownership of work. When you work in the traditional workforce, you go in, you might have to take the train in, but at least when you get to the office, you belong to a team of people. And because these gig workers are outside the team, and often on temporary contracts, they don't have any sense of ownership. When you don't have a sense of ownership over your product, you might deliver something crappy. You might not feel like, why should I bother? I'll just do what I can and deliver something mediocre and just get paid for it by the hour.
Yeah, because either if you do a particularly good job, you won't be recognized for it. So what's the why? Why make any extra effort?
Yeah, and I can tell you just as an aside, I mostly have great people working with me, but when somebody just delivers something to you that is 70% done, mm-hmm, because they're not fully employed by you, so you can't really hold them that accountable, then it just puts it back in your court as the business owner.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, you had to pay them, and now you've got something 70% done. When you're the boss in a traditional work environment, they know they have to deliver something that is 110% in order to keep their job. But when you're working with gig employees, they may or may not. They may or may not deliver something to you of high quality because they're on the move. And it turns out that the highly skilled, the highly talented ones, the highly talented gig workers are in demand and can start offering, demanding higher pay per hour. So
there is a way to grow. But I think, yeah, part of what we're talking about, it seems like, is also how one gets started in business. And we're in a time where what is a business is changing, the definition
completely
of what a business is.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are so many different types of businesses. The internet has brought with it types of jobs that most people my age, for particularly, don't really understand.
Like what?
Well, the marketing areas.
Right, the digital marketing,
yeah,
the copywriting. Oh, so I have one client, he's a landscaper. It's a big company, does more than landscaping.
Landscaping can be pretty big, too.
Well, that's a lucrative business.
Sure.
That's a lucrative business. But he was looking to build up his brand online. And so as I told you, are people that work on landscaping marketing exclusively.
Wow.
And they're on YouTube, they're online, and they'll take your landscaping business and brand it and put it out online. But in this case, he got proposals to do his website and SEO, search engine optimization, which, folks, just as an aside, websites and search engine optimization are not all that anymore. They are the minimum you need to have. Come write to me at noreen@defyandhustle.com. Call me, check out my website, defyandhustle.com. I will help you get the bird's eye picture on how to brand your business and get it out into the marketplace without wasting your time or money. But anyway, this guy was getting offers to do just his website and his SEO. They wanted $18,000 to do the website. This is not unheard of, but $18,000 for that and $5,000 a month to just do search engine optimization.
Mm.
That's a lot of money. This guy can probably afford it if he wanted to, but for most people, doctors, lawyers, dentists, or just about anybody else out there that's operating their own small business.
Solopreneurs, I think you call them.
Solopreneurs, or
yeah,
maybe you have a bunch of people working, a bunch of professionals, I should say.
Mm.
Shouldn't even say a bunch. You have professionals working for you in your organization. That's a lot of money, but the truth is you have to go out there nowadays into the digital marketplace if you're going to play at all. You have to push your brand into the marketplace. The website and the SEO may help you, but it's so swamped with ads, and the bigger the companies are, they're just swamped with ads. And then people go to your website. They may do some reading and stuff, but they really go there to check out how credible you are and to see if you meet their particular pain point. But most people are out there on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, YouTube, or any combination thereof, and you have to get out there and push into the market. And as an aside, the other thing that's coming full circle is now it's so crowded. There's so much information out there. There's so many suppliers out there, which is why the price points for your hourly rate as a doctor or a lawyer is dropping so precipitously, is because there's so many people out there marketing that might grab your business. So people are starting to just give their phone numbers out directly on the ads again, where it used to be.
I was going to say it. It sounds like we're almost going back to, I'll buy an ad in a newspaper.
Yeah, it's coming full circle.
It's just as effective because there's sort of a guarantee it'll be seen.
And the other thing that's coming back is, who do I already know? Everybody you know, folks, knows at least 10 other people that could probably get you business.
Hmm.
So you may not
word
even...
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth?
Yeah.
Developing relationships, people are getting tired of being sold to, and a lot of entrepreneurs go too large when they're first getting started.
Mm.
You're better off, in most cases, just staying in your local community and using word of mouth, reaching out to everybody you know. Sounds cliche, but to get started and make sure you stay in business those first few years, you reach out to people and then you ask them, this is what I'm doing. Could you please refer to me, anybody you know? And watch, you'll get more clients from that than spending all your money and time, because it takes a lot of time to do digital marketing too. And it takes a lot of creative work. You have to make different graphics. Not in every case, but don't always go running right over there. But I digress. So I just wanted to end up on the part about the gig workers on this, because I thought this was fascinating.
Okay.
Because people are feeling disconnected because they're working from home. Even a lot of these WeWork places are closing down, those sharing environments.
Hmm.
WeWork, the one over here, which was a really nice place, Work Well Win, was over here in Greenwich, and it was a very nice co-working space. They're starting to shut down.
Where was that? I think I did see that sign.
That was in the Granoff building here off of, I don't know if it's Railroad Avenue or if it turns into Hamilton right about there.
Yes.
Closed.
Ah.
People are feeling disconnected from their companies, and an astounding 70% of gig workers, current and former, 70% of them said they would not choose to be self-employed if they had known what they know now.
Mm.
So for those of you who are working for your boss and complaining about the workplace, take another look tomorrow. Go in there with a new attitude and go in there and be thankful. I'm not saying tolerate anything you don't need to tolerate. You can speak your, if you have something you need to say, you can come to me for that too. I do a workshop called Find Your Voice in the Workplace. If you have something you need to say, there's a tactful, professional way to say it, but don't think just running to the other side and leaving your employer and becoming a contract worker is all it's cracked up to be. It is not unlike the actors in Hollywood. I used to live out there in Santa Monica for a little bit of time, and you realize the cliche is true. They're working in the restaurants. They're handsome. They're beautiful. They may be talented, but only a few make it. And it's going to take a little bit of luck and a lot of hustle. Oh, the future. So I was looking at, so what does this all mean?
Yes, yes. We all wonder that.
We all wonder that. So the future, I don't really know, but I don't think it's turning around easily. I do think, Bob, that there is a huge disparity that's taking place between the companies that have their stock on the stock exchange.
Well, the ones that can still hire people full-time and give them the benefits.
Or the ones that have the algorithms, have developed the algorithms of, like the Ubers, like the TaskRabbits.
Hmm.
not like even like Indeed.com, who are putting the people in need with the people who need the work.
Hmm.
They're the ones making money. They've developed a product. And as long as that product's working, their stock prices are going up. It's often tricky to value those stocks, but they're the ones going up. And in many cases, the rest of us, our hourly rates are getting flattened out. Our ability to save for the future is getting diminished.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a good thing you can get a gig job when you're 65, because in many cases, retirement is not necessarily going to be there. But not to end on too poor a note, at least you'll be able to do something that maybe you're passionate about. And I do think that's going to be a good part of the upside, is people are considering now that what they're passionate about, what they're good at, and really how to get it out there and make it happen for you. There's employers, regulators, and litigators are going to have to consider new approaches to wage parity, worker exploitation. A lot of workers are being exploited, apparently, and I didn't get too much into that, but a lot of workers are being exploited in this environment and have no power. Benefit provisions. I know that they're considering something, portable benefits. So if you're working someplace for a while and you start to get benefits, that you can take them with you. And so they're looking into creative ways to make benefits portable.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, what is considered a worker classification, whether you're considered full-time, not, you know, a gig worker or any combination thereof, a hybrid of the two. And speaking of hybrids, one of the things you will be seeing more of, you're already seeing it, is hybrid employment opportunities. They say the happiest workers are the workers that have more flexibility. They're getting traditional benefits. They're getting a base income stream.
And they can augment that with gig jobs? Is that what you're about to say?
They have the ability to work from where they want sometimes.
Yes.
So they don't have to be – see, people's time. People need flexibility. Coming full circle, the pros of the gig economy.
I was trying to get a sense of what the hybrid – meant.
The hybrid means they're working for a company, arguably full time.
Yes.
But they have the flexibility to work from home if they're, you know, they have to go to their daughter's recital, or they have to work at night, or they have to do something. So it's not necessarily commuting to an office in New York City mm-hmm. every day and being there from 9 to 5 or 9 to 9, as the case may be. They can take their work with them as long as they get the work done and still be considered a full-time employee. So maybe it's some days in the office and some days at home, Monday through Thursday with Fridays from home or something like that. So it's this hybrid type of – which it exists, but these apparently are the happiest employees.
Sounds like it means we're heading towards that time when a big business has a meeting – and gets everybody into the conference room. What will actually be in the conference room are avatars of the people. They'll be at home with a screen set up in what would be the chair position, and that's how they'll be at the meeting.
I'm telling you, I do a lot of business just using Zoom, whether that's with my clients, because I have clients that are...
What does Zoom do? I don't know.
Zoom is like a Skype.
Okay.
All right. There's a lot of technology, but it's like a Skype. But Zoom... is, and there's WebEx out there, but you can have workshops, you can have talk to your clients,
mm-hmm.
you can talk to your workers by putting them all onto the same video screen, and then you moderate it so some people can raise their hands or talk to each other and see each other.
That's already happening. All right.
And then there's also project management systems that can be very good, so you can have one meeting at the beginning of the week, talk to everybody at the same time, and have like a project management software like teamwork.com or monday.com, so you can see and check up on people and give them dates for deliverables and comment back and forth with them without having to chase them down in you know, Connecticut someplace, or in Michigan or in California someplace. you get organized with everybody at the beginning of the work week, and you can see what's happening with your team members using a teamwork.com or something like that. And so, folks, that's it.
Well, almost.
Almost it. Well, so I'm Noreen Ehrlich. I do have a business development company. I used to do something called, I was a CFO on Wall Street for a long time, so I had to be very nimble. I worked with a lot of startups. These were funds, investment funds, that they raised hundreds of millions of dollars, and then we managed all sorts of assets. So I know how to do everything, many things, not perfectly, but many things from start to finish. But more specifically, I worked more recently doing something called private placement, which is capital raising. So one day I want to talk to the entrepreneurs out there that are trying to get their revenue going about how to convert your leads. Get out there and send emails and pick up the phone. And the mindset, the defy, stop being afraid of those voices in your head. Write an email that converts. And this has to do with being concise and specific with the people you're reaching out to, who are very busy, who are intelligent, who don't necessarily want your product. And you're going to have to talk to them about meeting their needs and be very specific. I would like to meet with you on this day for 5 minutes, or talk to you on the phone for 5 minutes of your time or 10 minutes of your time, something very concise. I can help you do business development, Noreen at Defiant Hustle. I can also teach you how to pick up the phone or write the emails that will convert. And that's just the beginning. So I appreciate you listening to me rant on and on. It's not that easy to speak for a whole hour.
Well, this was quite a subject, though, and it's changing. And I think I hear you saying that there could be a reactionary change back to the way things were to some degree, but managed differently.
I think, as we said, it's going to probably some things are really going to start to go wrong before we humans wake up and start to make shifts. Mm. But I do think that there is going to be some backlash, as we're starting to see, as workers attempt to become empowered, to demand rights. And I do think it's going to affect the legal field. I do think it's going to affect politics, taxing authorities, and how we're generating money and how we're even keeping track of all these workers. Again, when they say the economy is doing well, and I think about the event I was at last night, an event I was at last week, my clients with the physical therapy business that she used to run, and now she can barely, she's a great physical therapist, a talented businesswoman. Somebody like her needs to start thinking. I think it's going to affect her, how she manages her retirement and everything. This is Noreen Ehrlich, Defiant Hustle Radio. I'll see you next week. Bye bye. Back in his room.
Only AM 1490 and FM 105.5 WGCH Greenwich.
Special report: Trump impeachment trial. House Foreign Affairs Chairman Elliot Engel revealed that he talked with former National Security Advisor John Bolton in September after Bolton left the Trump administration. Correspondent Phil Mattingly reports Engel said Bolton suggested the Foreign Affairs panel look into the former U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, Marie Yovanovitch's recall, and implied that something improper occurred around her removal as the top diplomat in Kiev.
Now, a Democrat from the House is making clear that in a private phone call, John Bolton essentially flagged this for them months before it got to this point, making clear that Bolton did have these concerns long before he was drafting a book.
Deputy White House Counsel Patrick Philbin addressed Bolton's book.
We assumed that Mr. Bolton was disgruntled, and we didn't expect he was going to be